You are listening to a sermon by Thomas Bergen, recorded on Sunday, April 7th, 2019 at the Point Grey Inter-Mennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
In our series so far on the Gospel of Mark, we've looked at the identity of Jesus. We've seen Jesus as the strong one, the healing one, the authoritative one, and the teaching one. Some of these identities are actual titles that Mark gives Jesus. Other identities we discern as we behold Mark's portrait of Jesus in his words and deeds. For Jesus the strong one, the central verse we looked at was Mark 1:7. After me comes the one stronger than I. For Jesus the healing one, the central verse we looked at was Mark 2:17. It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. For Jesus the authoritative one, the central verse we looked at was Mark 2:28. So the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath. For Jesus, the teaching one, the central verse we looked at was the parable of the soils in Mark 4. Listen, a farmer went out to sow his seeds. I hope you've been enjoying this series so far, as I have, and that you feel like your vision of who Jesus is getting bigger and bigger as we add more and more layers. We've been working our way through the gospel sequentially. You can see that in the chapters. And this week is no exception because we're going to chapter 6 now. However, if I had to choose one central verse in Mark that highlights the identity of Jesus as the hospitable one, I'd jump ahead to chapter 10, verses 42 to 45, especially verse 45. Quote, Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles, i.e. King Herod, lord it over them. And their high officials, i.e. King Herod's banquet guests, exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must become your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all." And then verse 45, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." In Jesus' supreme act of hospitality, giving up his life as a ransom for many on the cross, we see the full extent of Jesus' hospitality. But we don't just see Jesus the hospitable one in how and why he dies. We also see this in how and why he lives. Throughout the Gospel of Mark, we see Jesus demonstrating hospitality through his words and deeds. So I'm going to start my sermon with a broad overview of Mark's portrait of Jesus, the hospitable one, who came not to be served, but to serve. After that, we're going to delve into one particular story in Mark, the tale of two banquets. In this story, we'll see how Mark juxtaposes the grisly details of Herod Antipas' banquet to paint a beautiful portrait of Jesus, the hospitable one, the shepherd host of a lavish banquet in the wilderness. To repeat, we're going to spend most of our time today looking closely at the difference between these two banquet stories in Mark 6. But first, we're going to look at some of the overall things we can observe about Jesus, the hospitable one, in Mark's gospel. So, how does Mark present Jesus as the hospitable one? As I read the gospel this week, three things stood out. Firstly, we see Jesus, the hospitable one, through Jesus' ability to relate to all kinds of people. Secondly, through Jesus' healing ministry. And thirdly, through Jesus' interruptibility. Firstly, we see Jesus the hospitable one in Jesus' ability to relate to all kinds of people. Mark 2:15 to 17. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples. For there were many who followed him. When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, "Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?" Sinners, tax collectors, sick people, rich people, children, Pharisees, Gentiles, Sadducees, Herodians. Throughout Mark, Jesus is rubbing shoulders with all kinds of people. And all kinds of people want to rub shoulders with him. Although they might not all be able to relate to Jesus, he can relate to all of them. Jesus' relatability is perhaps most apparent in his interaction with children. Mark 10:14 suggests that Jesus was in fact very popular with children. Let the little children come to me, for the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. Jesus is hospitable by being relatable. Secondly, we see Jesus the hospitable one in Jesus' healing ministry. Hospitality and healing are actually closely related ideas. In fact, English words like host, hostel, hotel, and words like hospice, hospital, and hospitality, they all come from the same etymological root. It seems to me that Jesus' hospitality and his healing are also closely related. When challenged about his hospitality, why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? Jesus refers to his healing ministry, or healing motive. It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Jesus is a hospitable healer in Mark, healing through hospitality, and hospitable in his healing. Through his power to heal all kinds of sicknesses and his willingness to heal all kinds of people, we see Jesus the hospitable one. Thirdly, we see Jesus the hospitable one in Mark's gospel, and Jesus' willingness to be interrupted. Throughout the gospel of Mark, Jesus is constantly on the move from one place to another, and then he's interrupted. People bang on his door. They chase him down from one village to the next. They crowd around him on the seashore so that he has to get into the boat to preach. And on one occasion, while Jesus is speaking, some people cut a hole in the roof and lower down a lame man. Talk about an interruption. More commonly, Jesus is walking on the route somewhere when he'll be interrupted, like when the woman with the issue of blood touches Jesus in the crowd and Jesus stops, notices, and says to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." Or when Jesus overhears some people from the house of Jairus, they're saying, "Your daughter is dead. Why would you bother the teacher?" And Jesus hears that and stops to show them that actually he would indeed be bothered. He would be interrupted. Jesus' relatability, his healing ministry, and his interruptibility are some of the key aspects of Mark's portrait of Jesus, the hospitable one. One of my favorite stories in the Gospel of Mark brings all these aspects of hospitality together. Mark 10:46-52. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, they're en route somewhere, a blind man, Bartimaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him, told him to be quiet. But he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So his disciples called to the blind man, "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you." Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." Immediately, he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. It's a cute little story, and it brings together all of these aspects of hospitality. So we've already seen how Mark presents Jesus as the hospitable one in these three ways. Now we're going to see some more aspects and angles of Jesus' hospitality as we look at the tale of two banquets in Mark 6. Again, the main text I want us to have in mind as we look at Mark 6 is Mark 10:42-45, what I've considered my central verse. And when Jesus tells his disciples in Mark 10, quote, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them," we can assume Jesus had rulers like Herod in mind. The sharp contrast between the two banquets in Mark 6 is matched by the sharpness of Jesus' emphatic rejection of Herod's example here in Mark 10. Not so with you. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be the first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. In fact, many scholars believe that in chapter 6, Mark intentionally mislabels Herod Antipas as King Herod, because he wants us to draw the comparison between King Herod and King Jesus. In reality, Herod Antipas was merely a tetrarch along with his brothers who were ruling various parts of Israel at that time. This is not, in other words, the same King Herod as the King Herod of the Christmas story. So as I compare these two banquets in this tale of two banquets, I notice three striking contrasts. Perhaps you will see more, and I look forward to hearing about that in the response time. I see that one banquet is death-dealing, while the other is life-giving. I see that one is full of power-grabbing, and that the other is full of power-sharing. I see that one is about face-saving, and that the other is about risk-taking. First, the death-dealing versus life-giving contrast. Mark 6 features one of the grisliest stories in the New Testament. I mean, it's hard to miss the head on the platter. Herod's banquet literally serves up death. At the end of Herod's banquet, John's head is served up on a platter, and John's disciples are made to gather up the leftovers in a tomb. By contrast, Jesus' banquet serves up life. At the end of Jesus' banquet, there is life abundant and left over, and Jesus' disciples are left to gather up the leftovers. Verse 42, they all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. In their serving up of death and life, respectively, both stories feature a chain of command. About Herod's banquet, we read in verse 27, Herod immediately sent an executioner with orders to bring John's head. The man went, beheaded John in the prison, and brought the head back to the girl, and she gave it to her mother. The sequence. Although technically the murderous plot at Herod's banquet originates with Herodias, who actively desires John's death, death passes through everyone's hands as they play along with the death-dealing chain of command sequence. Herodias, Herodias' daughter, Herod, the executioner, the girl, and then full circle. Back to Herodias. About Jesus' banquet, we read in verse 41, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. Although technically the life-giving miracle originates with God, life passes through everyone's hands as they play along with Jesus' life-giving command. Jesus gives thanks to God from whom all blessings flow, for the bread and life-giving blessing flows through him to the disciples who take and distribute it. Throughout the Old Testament, the leaders of Israel are compared to shepherds with a sacred responsibility to serve up life, to channel God's blessing to their people, not to deal out death. In Ezekiel 34, 2-6, we hear the impassioned voice of the prophet against corrupt leaders. Woe to you, shepherds of Israel, who take care only of yourselves. Should not the shepherds take care of the flock? You eat the curds, clothe yourselves with the wool, and slaughter the choice animals, but you do not take care of the flock. So my sheep were scattered over the whole earth, and when they were scattered, they became food for all the wild animals. When we read in Mark chapter 6, verse 34, that Jesus saw a large crowd and had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd, we should not think primarily of Jesus as one touched with sympathetic feelings, but I think more as one impassioned with compassion, impassioned with compassion, as the prophets were. He's passionate against the corrupt shepherds of Israel, like Herod, who have been not giving out life, but dealing out death. Ezekiel goes on, "Is it not enough for you to feed on the good pasture? Must you also trample the rest of your pasture with your feet? Is it not enough for you to drink clear water? Must you also muddy the rest for everyone else?" As Jesus says to his disciples, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place," it is as if he's gathering up the sheep. He's being the true shepherd because Herod isn't. He's protecting them. And you can hear him echo the prophet Ezekiel's dismay. "Was it not enough for you, Herod, to gorge yourself on all the power in Galilee? Did you really need to trample on John the Baptist? You were supposed to give God's people life-giving protection, not to deal out death." In addition to the death-dealing, life-giving contrast in this tale of two banquets, I also see a contrast in the power dynamics. Whereas power is grabbed in Herod's banquet, it is shared in Jesus' banquet. Herod's banquet is a zero-sum power-grabbing machination. Jesus' banquet is a power-multiplying miracle. Power-hungry, power-grabbing machinations are everywhere in Herod's banquet. And it kind of frustrates me, but often the best stories are full of this. Isn't that true? So we have this interesting story, and as we look into it, we see all these kinds of hidden things going on. So if Josephus is to be believed, the background here is that Herod's marriage to Herodias was a kind of opportunistic political power play that Herodias instigated. And this fits well with Mark's portrait of Herodias as an opportunistic Jezebel-like queen, and King Herod as a spineless, weak-willed Ahab-like king. And many commentators of Mark have noted that there are all sorts of parallels between this story and other stories in Mark with the stories in 1 Kings involving Ahab, Jezebel, and Elijah. Later in Mark 9, Jesus will lament John's death and say, "Elijah has come, and they have done to him everything they wished, just as it is written about him." So Jesus is interpreting basically what's happening in his time through the lens of the stories of the Old Testament. Like Jezebel, Herodias hates the prophet, John the Baptist, who questions her actions and causes her husband to doubt himself. Verse 19, "So Herodias nursed a grudge against John and wanted to kill him." Herodias had already amassed immense power, but her thirst for power was insatiable. She probably felt that as long as there was somebody out there who didn't recognize the legitimacy of her power, she was powerless. People who are power hungry always feel powerless. And Herodias' power-grabbing machinations are also on display in the way she uses her daughter in this plot to kill John the Baptist. Herod, King Herod, is the other main character in this power-grabbing banquet. Herod Antipas was part of the Herodian dynasty that only conformed to the requirements of the Torah when it was politically expedient for them. John the Baptist, on the other hand, along with his many supporters, they believed that the Herodians were illegitimate rulers because they were unfaithful Israelites. How could they rule God's people, in other words, if they themselves did not follow God's laws? In the end, Herod did what all power grabbers do, and used his power to get rid of his most powerful critic. Mark tells us that Herod put John in prison for pointing out the immorality of his marriage. Josephus tells us that Herod put John in prison because he feared John's political influence. It seems to me these explanations are two sides of the same coin. Those who pay attention to how power works will know that politics are always religious, and religion is always political. This is as true in Jesus' day as in ours. King Herod also demonstrates his power-grabbing machinations in using Herodias' daughter to please himself and his dinner guests. Verse 22, "When the daughter of Herodias came in and danced, she pleased Herod and his dinner guests." Unsurprisingly, this is the part of the story that has inspired many paintings, most of which remain PG, but there is nothing PG about the power and lust dynamics going on here. Indeed, lust is always a form of power grabbing. Herod's power grabbing overreaches, however, when, drunk on his feelings of power, he makes a grandiose offer to Herodias' daughter in verse 22. "Ask me for anything you want, and I'll give it to you." What Herod doesn't notice is that the girl he forced to dance around him has in fact got Herod dancing around her. Verse 25. "At once the girl hurried into the king with a request. 'I want you to give me right now the head of John the Baptist on a platter.' The king was greatly distressed, but because of his oaths and his dinner guests, he did not want to refuse her. After playing the power-grabbing game, even the great King Herod is rendered powerless and unable to do what he wants. In summary, what we see in Herod's power-grabbing banquet is everyone competing with everyone else for a limited supply of power. The power dynamics are zero-sum, but even the ones who seem to be winning eventually get zero. In Herod's banquet, the powerful are made powerless. By contrast, at Jesus' banquet, the powerless are made powerful. Power is multiplied as Jesus shares his power with his dinner guests, and as they come together to share their resources with one another. At Jesus' banquet, the scattered sheep without a shepherd encounter the Lord who is their shepherd host. They discover that the Lord is their shepherd, as Psalm 23 says, and that they therefore shall not want. Even in the presence of their enemies, trying to take their life, they meet the generous divine host who prepares a table for them in the wilderness. He makes them lie down in green grass and restores their strength. Verse 39, "Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass." The guests at Jesus' banquet have walked through the valley of the shadow of death. And there is no doubt that John's death would have been absolutely devastating to the kingdom movement of John the Baptist and Jesus. And yet they are comforted by being with the Lord and knowing that he is with them. Verse 31, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." They are strengthened as they feed on Jesus' truth and are guided along the right paths. Verse 34, "So he began to teach them many things." Even in Herod's paranoid utterance at the beginning of the story, "John, whom I beheaded, has been raised from the dead," Jesus' followers hear a distant echo of their resurrection hope. "Surely goodness and mercy will follow them to the end of days." At Jesus' banquet, Jesus shares his power with his guests by restoring their sense of hope and dignity in this dark time, and by literally giving them food. In verse 37, we get a sense of how little power the guests at Jesus' banquet felt they had. That would take more than a half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them? Jesus demonstrates to his disciples the surprising truth that, as the old gospel song puts it, little is much when God is in it. Verse 38, "How many loaves do you have?" Jesus asked. "Go and see." When they found out, they said, "Five and two fishes." But at Jesus' banquet, little becomes much as his guests share power, multiply resources, pool them together. And the result is the miracle of verse 42. They all ate and were satisfied. And so then we've looked at the contrast between, in the first part, death-dealing, life-giving, power-grabbing, power-sharing. And then the last contrast I want to make, I'll make it quick, and that is the contrast between face-saving and risk-taking. So In the face-saving that happens in Herod's banquet, we see, for example, the way that Herod has all of these guests, and Mark splits it into three parts. There's the military commanders, I don't have it in front of me. Military commanders.
High officials and leading men.
Yes, and what commentators point out is that these are kind of the three main power-broking kind of categories. So there's this elitist guest list that Herod has, and it's a sort of inner circle where everything's overlapping and all the power is being concentrated on Herod. So he invites them, and he's trying to consolidate his power and win favor over all these people. It's basically it's about face-saving. He's trying to impress them. It's a hospitality, not genuine, but for show. And then the reason he can't dishonor himself, or he can't go back on the offer he makes, is that he needs to save face. So he says to the girl, "I'll give you whatever you want." And it all goes wrong when she makes the unexpected request. But at that point, he has to save face, and at the expense of John's face. So that's the one banquet. And then the other banquet is the one where risk-taking is required. And I think this is something that's necessary in every act of hospitality. There's a sense of uncertainty in every act of hospitality. And Jesus, I think, in this miracle, does what he does in many miracles, which is that he waits for the cooperation of those for whom he performs a miracle. He looks for the signs of faith, that they're willing to cooperate with Jesus and participate with Jesus and take a risk. And so he asks his disciples, like, how much food do we have? And then he says he directs the disciples to organize the people into the different groups. And I can just imagine the awkwardness of some of those conversations as the disciples go to the people and say, sit here. You over here in this group. We're going to have dinner. Oh, we're having dinner. Where's the food coming from? So the hospitality requires that risk-taking. So these three contrasts are some of the ones I see. And I think now, more than ever, after looking at this banquet, we can look back on Mark 10, verse 42 to 45, and understand more of what Jesus is trying to say to us in that famous passage. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles, i.e. King Herod, lord it over them, and their high officials, i.e. King Herod's banquet guests, exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Not so with you, with the death-dealing, the power-grabbing, and the face-saving. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. With you, there ought to be power-sharing, life-giving, risk-taking. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." So again, to review, we've seen Jesus, the hospitable one, in the Gospel of Mark, in his ability to relate to all kinds of people, in his healing ministry and his interruptibility. And we've also seen how Jesus wants us to not pattern our lives according to the ways of this world, but according to his ways, to become hospitable in the ways that Jesus himself is hospitable. So, may God be with us as we share hospitality with one another and show one another the presence of Christ, that Jesus, the hospitable one, can actually be with us here, serving us, feeding us, strengthening us, inviting us to his banquet. Amen.